From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It's that time of week again where it's Thursday, believe it or not, 7 p.m. here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh. I'm Mark.
I'm Garth on the 31st of March.
I'm Leon on that same date.
Yeah.
And it's episode there. Nelson.
1-1-1.
That's one arm and one leg and one eye, in case you wonder what Nelson is. It's a cricket thing. An umpire, Dickie Bird, would hop on one leg.
All right,
for all
so
you
what
youngsters.
Have we got going on this week? We have got what we've been playing this week. Wow, Mark, you make the rest of us nerds look positively good looking. We are going what we've been playing this week. Then, Leon, you are also going to talk about what you've been playing with people who aren't us.
Who aren't us, endured.
I'm also going to talk about some iOS because it's long overdue. And then we will actually make time for a pandemic legacy recap.
Now. All that and a whole lot more coming up after this.
That was Ida Maria with Louie on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh. A lovely little song there, but you know what's not lovely? World War II and Cthulhu.
In the year 1942, four soldiers vanished from the training program of the newly formed 1st Ranger Battalion, their names stricken from the roster. Chosen for their unique skills, they would fight in secret against terrifying supernatural enemies and overwhelming odds.
Ah!
And the good thing is you've never heard that before.
No.
But welcome to the world of Fireteam Zero, which is a 1-4 co-op survival horror game designed by Mike Langlois and Christian Leonhard, published by Emergent Games only last year. It plays in around 90 minutes, it says.
Yeah, sure it does.
Yeah. It may also play in a lot less or a lot longer in that, depending on how things play out, and no doubt we will get to that. But basically, Fireteam Zero is a cooperative game of combat supernatural horror in which the players take on the roles of special ops teams sent in behind the enemy lines during World War II to deal with the living artifacts that have begun to surface in order to feed on the chaos and bloodshed of the war. If not contained, Leon, these artifacts threaten the very future on life on Earth and Hobart.
Ooh!
Now, in each game, what's going to happen? Mark, what's going to happen?
Well, you're going to have heroes, and they are going to be fighting against monsters.
Exactly right. These monsters are going to be racing these heroes to race to find and locate and complete a series of mission objectives while fighting off an unstoppable flood of monsters bent on their destruction. I personally can vouch for the fact that these monsters are unstoppable because they are just relentless. Now, if we succeed as heroes, then we live to fight another day and get to do it all again. But if and when we fail,
yep,
it's not really that great. And fail we will, fail we did, and fail we have.
Yes.
Now, this game, which I must say was very, very genuinely and generously given to us as a review copy by Polymorph Games. So thank you very much to Neil and the rest of the team from Polymorph.
Cheers, Neil.
This is a massive box of a game. It is about the size of 2 standard reference bananas high, about 3 reference bananas wide, and about 3 or 4 reference bananas long.
It is a monster box.
It is enormous, this box, and it contains a crap ton of minis. It contains a lot of very, very large tiles that are your board. It contains a load of cards for all of the characters, and it contains a world of pain. Now, this game, in the true sense of the word, is survival horror. Because you are not going to be able to cart out all of these monsters and walk through and complete your mission feeling like a hero. You are going to come out of this feeling like you have earned every inch of progress, because in true survival horror phase, any monster you kill on a certain round is just going to respawn at the beginning of the next one. So it doesn't matter whether you kill 1, 2, or 10 monsters in your cooperative turn, they're just going to come back and they're going to do all their kinds of pain again and again and again. Now this game, because it is co-op, allows you to talk about the game and what you're going to do very, very well. And I do like that. But how does a turn work? You're going to start by drawing your cards. Now, this is where the first thing that someone's probably going to talk about. It's a very, I guess, mechanic that some people love and some people hate. But you're going to draw up to 5 cards, which you will use in combat, but they are also your hit points, i.e. your health. And when you get attacked, if you can't discard one of your cards for every point of damage you take, you're immediately knocked down. And in this game, as soon as 2 heroes essentially get knocked down within the same turn, it's insta-lose, because there is what is humorously called the lucky coin.
No, not the lucky coin.
Which starts on its lucky side up, and as soon as one hero gets knocked down, it flips to its unlucky side. And if another hero gets knocked down while it is still on that unlucky side, you all lose.
Everyone's unlucky.
Everyone loses.
You promised we wouldn't talk about the coin.
The coin, it's so beautiful. It's this chunky little metal coin. It looks awesome and sounds good when you switch that bastard from its lucky side to its very, very unlucky side.
Pure evil.
So, you're going to draw some cards. Then the heroes get to have their phase, which going around in the standard clockwise order, starting with first player, they'll get to move a little bit. They'll get to potentially search a spawn point and try and make a dint in this recon deck, because essentially this is a search and destroy game. You will have 12 spawn points on the board, and you have to basically go and search almost all of them, because somewhere in the recon deck, which is not surprisingly 12 cards, the same number of spawn points, there are going to be generally 2, 3, maybe 4 mission critical cards that you need to find and then need to complete in order to win the mission. So you are going to be, as players, going around the board trying to find these 12 spawn points to be able to then hopefully survive whatever bad things are going to happen, complete your recon missions, make your way to the exit, happy days. And it sounds simple enough, doesn't it?
It does, but wait.
There's a whole lot of pain, because once the hero phase happens, where you might have moved a bit, you might have tried to search a little bit, and God forbid, you might have even tried to kill some of the big baddies using the very simple, I think, dice mechanic, which is you have your hand of 5. Each of those cards has a couple of abilities, but the main thing you'll use it for is it'll show you the range of your attack, whether you can attack within the same square or 1 or 2 away. The strength of your attack, and the strength is how many dice do you get to roll? There are 3 types of attacks that you can do. You can do your brawl attack, which is generally in the same square that you are in. There's also a shot attack, shooting your gun, which might get you 2 away, but more than likely will only allow you to shoot a monster that's 1 square away. And then you've got your grenades, which, look, you can generally throw them to the next square as well, but they will do damage to everything in that square, good, bad, and otherwise. So they do a lot of damage to the baddies, but they also hurt us good guys too. And then it gets even worse, because the monsters decide to have their turn. Now these monsters, unlike the heroes, they get to ignore terrain, and they just get to move and get ever closer to us every single turn. They'll always attack the player who is higher up the turn order. One by one, they'll get to attack you, and they will almost always do a fair amount of damage. You might be lucky, and you might be able to play some cards to fend it off, or you might have an ally who will play a card and stop that monster from moving or stop it from attacking you. But more often than not, then you won't, so you'll have to discard some cards to be able to combat that bit of an attack. And after those monsters have done, then any monsters that are elite, they get to do the same thing, and then heaven forbid you have a boss monster on there, then he gets to go last. He or she, I'm not playing favourites with monsters. They will more than likely kill you and kill you bad. And then, to rub salt in the wound, the very last thing of this round is you will roll some dice, and every monster that you killed comes back on the board. Because it is not survival destruction, I'm killing monsters and relaxing and chilling out. It's survival horror where you put up with wave after wave after wave of all these big bads who are hell-bent on doing you pain. Do we like it, guys?
Well, look, that probably brings us to the first point, doesn't it? That sense of wave after wave after wave. Yes, it creates the tension in the game, but you feel like you're wading through crap for no benefit at all, because at the end of the turn, they're going to come back.
No, every time you kill monsters, yes, you don't have to deal with them right that second or at the end of your turn, but then you will have to deal with them straight away afterwards.
Yeah, you will. And I guess we're going to come to this discussion from a few different points of view, because we've had quite a few conversations around this game over the last time. Now, we've played it probably, what, three or four times would be now...
Ish, yeah.
Ish. A couple of times we played it with a minor rule incorrect, which I personally think didn't really alter the experience dramatically enough to alter my personal opinion of it. But I think for me it comes down to, what does survival horror mean?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, a game like this where it is, you are not trying to win, you are trying to survive till the next round. Not even to try and survive and win this whole game. You are just trying to figure out collectively as a team of heroes, which we are in normal life anyway, how do we win? How do we make our turn work so that we don't have that so-called lucky coin flip twice, because that in itself is a very hard thing to accomplish, let alone try and survive and win this game, of which, personally, we haven't done yet.
No.
We've played this four times and we have been chewed up and spat out by this game every single time.
Yes, we certainly have. And a friend of mine, Adam, we gave this game to. He likes playing a solo game himself. He played this game, I think it was either 7 or 8 times. And he is a hardcore survival horror, like, video game guy since they were invented.
Yep.
So he's all about that kind of thing. Playing it all by himself, so controlling every move that happens on the whole board, he won it once.
Yeah.
Wow.
Out of 8 times. This game is too hard.
Well, look, one of the things that I want to say off the bat I do like about this game, and it comes from the fact that it's hard, is that you have to analyse every turn basically within an inch of its life. Garth, what are you going to do? What cards do you have? Leon, and we go around the table and we talk about, oh, I'm going to do this, then you'll do that, blah, 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 blah. Like, if you don't do that, you're going to get wiped out straight away.
Yeah.
You really have to strategize every single turn.
I agree. There have not been many games that I have played that are co-op that you need to sit down and analyze as a team from turn one, player one, round one, every single move.
Mm.
And that in itself is a unique experience because it immediately gets the table talking. Every player has their own deck of cards for their own particular character, and every person has generally a hand limit of 5. But the cards are basically, they should be open. Everyone should be able to virtually see what everyone is doing, because Leon, you might be taking first player and saying, all right, well, I'm going to go there and do this particular thing. But then I should be butting in and saying, well, I can boost your attack, or I can help you search some more, or I can do a something or other that's going to make your turn a bit more effective. But if I do that, then that's sacrificing one of my 5 hit points, because that's all I've got, because my hand limit is my health. So how's someone going to help me? Because I'll probably have to then hang back and not be attacked by monsters. Yeah. And we haven't even done one person's turn yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty much. There's no cowboying whatsoever. None of this. Oh, on my turn, I'd like to. No, you can't.
No.
Unless we all say that is the best thing for all of us, you just absolutely can't. The theme itself, I absolutely love. As soon as I saw it and heard the theme, well, that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And but the fact that in the game, the main game that it comes with, and there are expansions for this, the main game comes with 4 different scenarios, and there's 3 missions in each scenario. And my understanding was, which I was wrong, and it's probably my own fault that I was wrong, that this was kind of like a Mice and Mystics type thing, that you follow the story all the way through. And the story, I think, does kind of go all the way through. But your achievements and the things you do don't actually follow all the way through. Because we thought, you finish the first mission, however well you went, you'd get a certain amount of upgrades and focuses and weapons and stuff for the next round. That's not true at all. It is basically 12 separate scenarios. They just are linked by a very thin story, which I would have liked to a bit thicker. And the fact that if it was like a Mice and Mystics, you could play through the whole thing. That's what I was looking for, and it wasn't that.
Well, there's a reason for that, I reckon. And it's just that You're going to die in the missions.
Garth, something's happened to your microphone. It's still definitely turned on. Just check your cords there.
Yeah, we don't need to hear, listen to Garth talk anyway. But, yeah, it's it's just, yeah. And he didn't even talk about the... Well, your microphone just exploded there.
Yeah. I don't know what you've done, Garth.
Either way, we didn't even talk about the twist track, which every turn that you have to move up, and every three turns you do that... a little card comes out that says, for the rest of the game, this ability happens, and it's always negative. And the little search deck that we're trying to find our objectives to actually win this game out of the 12 deck of 12, nearly everything that comes out that isn't our objective is negative, as well as when we get our objectives, they're also generally negative. So it's very hard.
Yeah, so this game isn't easy. No. I think it's pretty fair to say that. But again, I just keep coming back to that survival horror and survival, because that's what this game is about. Now, you look at this game and I don't know whether it screams fantastic straight out of the box. I think the minis look good. I think the board, maybe no.
We can't go past that. It warped within seconds. And not to warp to the fact that it was unusable, but straight away it did kind of go on my dining table, which was a bit not cool. And the minis, they're fine.
Yeah, that was one question I had. And like I was thinking back to when I had, I can't even remember the name of it, the zombie game by Flying Frog, Last Night on Earth.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Where a lot of things were cardboard standees. Now, this is a monster box, but the main reason because it's a monster box is the monster minis.
Yeah, well, half of the box is the minis.
And some of them are massive. How much would you lose if these were really high-quality cardboard standees with great art? How much would you lose from the game, do you think?
As gamers, nothing. As people that were buying it, probably 60% of people that would buy the
and
game.
And of course we
which
know...
Which is a sad thing.
I was going to say, with Kickstarter, we know one of the golden ingredients in the Kickstarter is these is amazing minis that you can ogle. Because I think... You know, replace them with cardboard standees. You could reduce the size of the box by half. You could reduce the price potentially by 2/3. The other thing I was laughing at when I read this on Board Game Geek. Each map can be played separately in about 45 minutes. Or together complete an entire operation, which is
the three missions.
In 3 hours. Now, it took us pretty much the 3 hours to play one mission.
Yeah,
which we did not win.
Did it speed up at all the last time you guys played? Because by that time you played it quite a few times.
It sped up only for the fact that we lost quicker. but not much quicker.
No, but I guess, and this is certainly not a criticism of the game, is the reason for me that it takes a long time is because there is so much discussion.
Yes, that's right.
It's not about the game itself. It's about the fact that it is just... flinging wave after wave of things that are going to kill you and can quite easily kill you with one attack. Now, the way it works is generally that there are X number of baddies per hero. So that's how the scaling works in this game. In the game we most recently played, there was one minion per hero. So there was four minis. Mm. And then there were four elites, which are the next wave up for heroes. So there were already 8 baddies on the table for the four of us heroes, and didn't matter how many that we killed, they were going to come back again anyway, and they can spawn from the same spawn point, so it's not like there's going to be one there, one there, one there. You roll a d12, and that's where they're going to turn up. These particular ones also had an ability, which is if they spawn and a hero is in the adjacent square to them, they just run straight to you. So you are immediately in a world of poo.
And two of the games that we played, we lost instantly because we flipped over a card and it was the objective we were looking for.
Yeah.
Which spawned an elite in the spot that we're in.
Mm. And immediately attacked.
And that happened both games that we played and they died straight away. So yeah, I'm a child of survival horror as well myself. I grew up playing them and I'm a big fan of them, but it's just unbalanced. And I do like the fact that it's very, very strong co-op and that's awesome. But you also got to look on the fact that if you have a proper like alpha gamer in your group, not like Mark who thinks he is and we just slap him down, but a proper one that really takes over, it would just be them talking to themselves for an hour until they lose and then spit it at everyone that, why didn't you help me?
Well, let's switch it out to our final thoughts. But let's switch that into... critiquing it based on what it is. Because I think we're going to have probably two or three very different opinions on that. So, Mark, do you want to go first and tell us what... from the couple of plays you've had of it,
yeah,
your experience and your thoughts on it.
So, look, I love the survival horror part, and you very much feel like you're just surviving, or in a lot of cases not surviving. I think overblown as far as the minis go, but good production values on the cards and the map. Look, I definitely play it again, but I don't know whether, you know, Descent or one of those other mini-type games is going to give a more greater fun experience.
Leon?
Yeah, it's too unbalanced and too unfair, which is a shame because I really wanted to like it. And the fact that it is very, very expensive for what it is. If you just wanted lots of miniatures, there's Blood Rage and stuff like that, which is, again, not cheap. But for the same price of this, you could nearly pick up a second-hand copy of a Blood Rage with also a Eldritch Horror or even a Base Descent or a Mice and Mystics,
yep,
nearly on top of it, maybe for an extra $20 on top of the price of this. And I'd recommend that a million times, sadly, before this.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is this game, when you do compare it to Descent like you did, Mark, the thing I love about Descent is it really doesn't matter whether you win or lose. Almost always the scenario comes down to the last, like, dice roll, or the Overlord could win, or the heroes could win, or something like that. Whereas the brutalness of this damn lucky coin is that all you need is two monsters to knock over some people, and it's immediately the game over. Doesn't matter how close you are to finishing. Or it could virtually be on the second or third turn of the game, and it's basically a reset from that point. Mm. I enjoy the fact that it is hard, because you don't want to go into a game going, how am I going to win it this time? I want to go into a game thinking, if I win this, I'm going to have used all my brain cells to be able to make it happen. It looks great when it's on the table. I think it would look amazing when the minis are painted. It's just an unbalanced game for mind. I just can't see how I can recommend this when there are so many other options. This game is close to being really good, and for me, it's just not quite there.
If you're right with house rules, if you house ruled a few things, like kill a monster, twist track goes back down, something to that effect, this game could be awesome, but the fact that there are other games out there that are awesome, and you don't have to do that, just wins out every time.
There you go, a mega game has thrown our mega discussion into anarchy.
Oh, yeah, that was Curtis Stigers and the Forest Rangers with This Life on Edge Radio 99.3 with the Dice Men Cometh. Now it is time to switch into round two of what we/Leon have been playing this week.
Yes, yes, yes. And most people, if they just heard that song, would know exactly what it's from. And what it's from is the hit TV series Sons of Anarchy, which had a board game brought out called Men of Mayhem. And it was brought out by Gale Force 9, I believe. The same guys who brought out a Firefly game and a Spartacus game that everyone thought, oh, it's just based off a TV show. And hang on, these games are brilliant.
Brilliant, you say?
Yes.
Wow. All right, well, thanks for talking to us about Sons of Anarchy.
Shut your face. So, yes, Sons of Anarchy. Players take the role of a rival gang out to control territories, accumulate contraband, and reap the monetary rewards of illegal enterprise. With each turn, gangs must attempt to control a range of sites by assigning gang members and resources to claiming, defending, and fighting for money, contraband, and guns. However, other players can challenge for the right of territory. I shouldn't read things. I should just say things, which always leads to conflict. Negotiation, threaten, and ally with rival gangs when it serves your needs. But be wary of the knife in the back. This game is about making and breaking alliances, and only the gang with the most money at the end of 6 rounds will win.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. So anyway, when you pick up this game, you pick one of the four gangs. You've got the Sons of Anarchy Motorcycle Club. You've got the Mayans, which is a Hispanic bike gang. You've got the 1-9ers, which is a African-American street gang. And you've got the Lin Syndicate, which is a Chinese-American triad. Yeah. Only two of them are actually bike gangs, but they're all got little bike guys. There you go. That's the one negative I'll say about this game. Now move on. Each gang is given their opening order tokens, money, contraband, guns, prospect members, and full members. Now, at this point, you can decide that everybody starts with the same stuff, but that's boring. We don't want to do that. You flip the board straight over to the high-octane version of the game, and that's exactly actually what it's called, where everybody gets different bits of resources based off the kind of gang they are. For instance, the Sons of Anarchy get more guns because in the TV show, they're gun runners.
Okay.
And the Mayans get more contraband because they're more in the illegal drug trade type of thing. The game is played on a grid board. There's always the same five starting locations. There's the Charming Police Station. The reason it's called that is because the town is called Charming. Before you two...
Ooh, yes, it's a darling.
Before you two idiots that haven't played it would say anything. Where you gain control of the first player patch, and you can get rid of some of your police heat that you have attained from shootouts and other illegal activities. There's the St. Thomas Hospital, where you can go and get back injured members who have been injured in throwdowns before they get transferred to the emergency room. Because in the emergency room, which is another one of the boards, that at the end of your turn, if you've got any guys in there, you roll a die. 4, 5, 6, hooray, they come back to the clubhouse, they get a hero's welcome.
Awesome.
1 to 3, they're dead from all the bullet holes. There's also the cut and bag op, where you can exchange cash for contraband, and the gun factory, where you trade cash for guns. Then at the start of the first 3 rounds, you'll flip over 2 new locations each time, till you eventually have 11 locations. And there's extra ones in the box, so you can play this like 2 or 3 times before you've never seen any of them again.
Yep.
And there's always different combinations of them. So then there's also the Anarchy deck, which you reveal cards from. At first you reveal 1, then 2, then 3, and then you keep revealing 3s until the game is over. These cards have special rules on them, and they can be things like temporary locations that have really high rewards. There could be hassles from the cops where they start cracking down on things like drugs or guns in the area, so you have to be careful.
Damn fuzz.
There could be end-of-round penalties called last calls, which are things like whoever has the most heat has to lose a member at the end of it, send them to jail, something to that effect. So then the game begins, and each round you'll do various actions depending on how many order tokens you have. You can ride, which is moving your gang from one location to another. Yes, indeed. You can exploit, which means using a tile's ability, which can only be done once per gang per turn. So once it's done, then it's done.
Yep.
You can recruit, which is getting a prospect, which you just put into your little clubhouse board. There is patch in, which is spend 1 money and 1 gun, and you turn a prospect into a full member, where he gets his little motorcycle that goes vroom.
Well, that's nice, isn't it?
And makes him much, much stronger. Then, a thing that happens quite a lot is the throwdowns, which is where 2 rival gangs will be fighting over a location. And as soon as that location is fought and won, someone can exploit it straight away. So that's the reason why you do it. So, during the fights, the 2 gangs on the same tile, you can call in reinforcements by throwing in order tokens and calling them from various different places. You do that in patch order. Then you blind bid by putting out a fistful of guns, how many you're going to use in the battle, and then flipping them over. Anybody that uses guns gains heat, which means if you get after a certain amount of heat, you can't sell a certain amount of contraband. And also if you use guns, it means you're going to be sending the rival guys to the hospital or the emergency room. Normally from a fight, they just go home.
I've had enough.
Yeah. Pardon me. So then based off how many guys you have there and how many guns in the battle, each are worth a certain amount of points. You also roll a die for each, just to add that little extra luck factor in there. Whoever has the most is the winner. They can claim the territory, and everybody else bugs off home. Yeah, so once all that's done, everybody's done all their turns, then you do 1 more round of blind bidding where you put all the contraband you want to sell in the middle, and everybody reveals. And the more contraband that's in there, the less they're worth, because you flood the market.
Yeah, okay.
Just like in real life and stuff.
I'll have to trust you on that one.
Yeah, and also, another good thing, very similar to Nothing Personal, because this game has a lot of kind of similarities to Nothing Personal, is that you can make deals with money, guns, and contraband at any point during the game to do absolutely anything, and you can then renege on it 5 seconds later if you please, which does happen from time to time. So after all that's done, new locations and new cards come out, and you do that 6 rows in the game, and whoever has the most money at the end of it wins.
This sounds a bit like...
It is a bit like that, yeah.
A Euro worker placement game with a combination of mechanics over the top with a thinly veiled theme plastered on an inch thick.
Motorcycles. No. I'll agree with you that it is basically a worker placement game that has a bit of combat and stuff in it, but it's definitely got theme to it with the negotiation and all the stuff that's on it. And it's very well done. It's a game that, if I were to make a list of games that's my favourite games that just nobody's played, I think this would be number 1 with a bullet by a mile.
Yeah,
if
wow.
If you have got a group like I have, like the group that I play with, my 3 friends, Josh, Adam, and of course my wife, Sarah, Me and Adam have known each other all our lives because we're cousins. Josh, we've known since high school, so about 15 years. And Sarah and me have been together for about 8 years or so now. So we're all very close friends, and we're all solid gamers, and we don't take anything personally. Literally, why nothing personal is one of our favourite games. So we're all happy to screw each other over as much as we can, knife in the back every second. And because of that, this is a game that probably wouldn't be in, like, say, my top 10 favourite games, but in our group, it's up there in the single digits for how much it goes well with us. It's an absolute pearler of a game that just nobody's played, and it is such a shame, because people just see it and they go, well, I don't like the theme, or I don't like the TV show, or it's a bit violent, which is, I suppose it is, kind of. But it's just the actual mechanics of the game, kind of what Gale Force 9 has done with their other games. People just think, oh, it's just the theme, so it's going to be garbage. No, not at all.
So does it play in the hour that it says it does?
I'd say an hour to 90.
Yeah? Because that would be in itself a selling point, because I love Nothing Personal as well. But trying to get a game of that done in under 3 hours, especially with some of the Turks expansions and what have you, is just impossible.
So the funny thing is, we played Nothing Personal directly after this, which is another one of our favourite games. I won both of them, by the way.
Hey!
Did I mention that? Hey! Everybody at home, did I mention that? That I won both of them? But Nothing Personal, and we've always found with Nothing Personal, is that the moving around the cards and the ambiguity of the rules of the things that the cards just kind of do, that's what takes majority of the time.
Yeah.
Whereas in Sons of Anarchy, there's not heaps of rules. The game is relatively simple. You've got orders, you go to places, you have fights, next round, and things kind of go from there. But it is a lot to do with your negotiation and, oh, what am I going to do, and should I ally with them? And so if you like that kind of aspect, with like kind of simple mechanics, you don't have to muck around with hundreds of different types of cards. It's brilliant.
There's a lot packed in the box as well. I was quite surprised because it didn't look big on the shelf when I saw it. But looking at Garth was flicking through a few pictures on Board Game Geek while we're talking here. There's a lot packed in, and I must admit, I was certainly one of those people that thought, yeah, it's a TV show theme game. It's rubbish. However, I hadn't thought about the Gale Force 9 angle because I do like Firefly, even though I think it overstays its welcome for what it is. It can be too overblown.
Yeah.
And I haven't played Spartacus, but a lot of people hold that in quite high regard.
Yes.
Not in your typical TV show themed game. So, look, I'm interested to give it a try now, Leon. You've brought it to our attention.
I think on my birthday we may have to give it to the table. Yeah. It can go up to 5. There are a couple of expansions for it. The expansions only add extra gangs to it that you can. And so if you got one of them, you could play 5. Another one, you could play 6. I mean, maybe 6 if you made it like a night of it. I mean, it still wouldn't take like 4 hours to do. But if you had 6 people that have played the game before and were really into that kind of thing, 6 could be a thing. And I think an even number is good for most betrayal type of stuff of games, because then you have your 2-on-2 or you're all ganging up on
That's
one,
right.
And then they get
pissy
and stuff. 3's kind of, if you play a 3-player of any of these type of games, if you align with somebody twice in a row, that third player is just pissy for 2 hours, no matter how solid your backbone is.
Look, I like the idea of the Grim Bastards expansion.
Yes.
Can I be the Grim Bastards when we play?
They actually tease you by, I don't know if this was supposed to happen, they actually have their board, their clubhouse board in the base box, and they were the first expansion. So, like, their first expansion has, I think, another copy of their board and then, like, all their minis and stuff. It might have been a screw-up with the copy that I got, but it's just a little tease for guess what you could have if you spent a bit.
Wow.
And there's also another expansion apparently on the way that is to add some Irish gangs to it and maybe some actual extra stuff, some more boards and some more rules. But it's been talked about it for a while and there hasn't been much of it. Because a lot of people haven't jumped on this one, it might not ever happen, and it's an absolute damn shame.
Well, I often get called Charlie Hunnam by my lovely other half. She thinks I look about the same, and I think, Mark, you get called Ron Perlman quite often because you look a bit like that. And obviously, Leon, you've been known to be a bit of a Katie Seagull. Seagull.
Ow!
Anyway, I think we should play some songs, and then I'll come back and do a little iOS update, hey?
That was Emiliana Torini with Jungle Drums on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Now, Garth, before you tell us all about your latest toilet exploits,
Greaves,
which are, of course, iOS and Android games, if you did have an Android device.
Yes.
Leon.
Yes.
You wanted to talk about something a bit exciting for the listeners out there.
It is extremely exciting for the listeners as well as myself. We have some sexy Dice Men merchandise.
Yeah.
We've finally pulled finger and got it done after being requested several times. So redbubble.com, which is an Australian site, but it also does ship worldwide. We've got our Dice Men logo up there in black and white, and it will go on to T-shirts, hoodies, and coffee cups, the normal coffee cups and travel coffee cups, and all those different things I just mentioned. There's heaps of different multiple colours and whatever else. And yeah, get on it. I will be doing it as soon as I get home. I've got hundreds of dollars worth of our own stuff to buy, as well as a cheeky custom Marvel dice mat.
Well, there
which
you
I'll
go.
Tell you back in a few weeks.
Nice. And look, Garth, before you go into the toilet again, let's just give another shout out to Neil Barry from Polymorph Games for providing us with the awesome Fireteam Zero. Even though we were sort of on the fence there about it. It's a massive box, and we really appreciate getting to play these amazing games and not having to shell out all our hard-earned cash.
Exactly. Even though that's what I'm about to do as soon as Star Wars Rebellion is here.
Must be close.
Got to be close. I can feel it in my spidey sense.
Now, speaking of shelling out all my hard-earned cash, Garth, have you got any news for me about the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game app?
Well, like we touched on a week or so ago, I think when you were doing some Gamma or even the week before, Leon.
Yeah.
Yes, Mark, I have, and it was meant to be out on March 29, and it's delayed until currently the 26th of April. So you've got another 3.5 to 4 weeks to find the $12.99 that you'll probably have to pay for this. I have no idea what the price is actually going to be. But the great thing about the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game delay is that it's all to do with the feedback they've got from the beta testers.
But that's also good news because it means I've got more time to do more Google surveys and get free Google money to spend in the App Store.
Well, there you go.
I think
that's
I've got
nice.
$9.87 from the 1,000 surveys that I've completed.
And it also
so
means
far.
You've got time to play your Warhammer Adventure Quest Pathfinder card game thing that you talked about last week.
And especially since you have that now, you could easily find the extra few dollars you need when you sell all your Pathfinder stuff because you no longer need it because you've got Warhammer, you've got this app coming out, which since it's been delayed should hopefully be awesome, even though people generally go, oh, it's delayed, that's horrible, it's the end of the world. No, it means they're making it better. Just be patient.
Okay, you've had your lesson now, Mark.
Thank you.
No, it's for the millions of video game people out there that are just, it's delayed. Shut your mouth.
Yeah, well, let's talk about delayed. I think we should get a bottle of bubbly and open it when Seven Wonders celebrates its 1 year of being in testing and not having come out. So it's now approaching 200 and something days of being in testing. So this is kind of like that game that we're just never going to see. Even though there's been plenty of footage of it for a long, long time, I don't understand why it's taking so long. No one has said anything about
this. Do you think, and I don't know if I'm being facetious when I say this, do you think they don't want it to come out yet so they can just sell just a few more board games? Because this could be, particularly, you know, on the pass-around tablet or all having a tablet in front of you, it could be a board game killer if it's really good.
Sales of Jewel, as in Seven Wonders, the Jewel, would have probably been half if this app had come out before that game had come out. I bet good money on that.
Well, Seven Wonders Jewel did get Board Game Geek's two-player game of the year. And I had a copy in my hand only 2 hours ago, Leon.
And it's not here because?
It's not here because, well, we were kind enough to receive some games from a very lovely publisher called TMG yesterday. So we've got a lot of research and playing to do before I can go and get more games.
And did we mention Tasty Minstrel Games? They are tasty.
They are awesome. And we will be playing Scoville tonight.
Ooh,
so
spicy.
Set your tongues to stun. So anyway, let's move on from all of those things. We are going to talk about The Game, which is The Game, or the Spiel des Jahres nominee called The Game, which is a card game, where essentially you're just trying to play the right cards to go from 100 down to 1. But it's a game called The Game.
There's got to be something to this. Because I've watched reviews for this game. It looks like the mechanic out of a bigger game. I don't get it.
Well, Garth, you didn't say the full title. The Game, : Are you ready to play the game? Like, it's so good they said it twice in the one name.
So anyway, the reality of this is it is a quick little, apparently very good game that you can play solo or you can play with pairs and twos and threes and what have you. But when you think there's a Spiel des Jahres nominee, you think it's got to be good. But then try to do a Board Game Geek search for a game called The Game and you're not going to get very far. Yes. It's also, I don't know, is it too simple? I don't know why I would bother with this. But if you want to not shell out for a box of cards, go on and get The Game, which is the game called The Game.
Okie doke.
Okay.
Right.
Now, just in between some news, I just want to talk about what is, I think, a fantastic implementation for a game on iOS, and that's Splendor. Now, this game's been out for quite a few years now. Had an implementation on iOS and Android not too long ago in the last few months. But I have been playing a bucket load of this lately, purely for airplane reasons. I've been sitting on a lot of planes going mm-hmm. to and from the state quite a lot. Also because when I started playing it, I thought, I can keep playing this. This is really, really good. Because Splendor is a fantastic game where you always feel awesome sitting around the table with those big, chunky gem tokens that are going around. The fact that it can be explained and taught really quite quickly and played in about 40 minutes or so in the physical game are all awesome things. But this game looks like an exact replica of the physical board game put onto a little screen. The colours pop. The screen is just absolutely crystal clear and easy to read. And you're able to get a great game in about 15 minutes, which is awesome.
Can you play with humans or only robots?
Why do you care, Leon?
Because I have other humans that I like. You would be one of them. I could download it and play with you right now, but
yeah,
no.
Yeah, well, we could do that. So, yes, you do have the option to be able to do that. Or
excellent.
You can play with various AIs, and the AIs, very much like Carcassonne, you can have balanced AIs and crazy AIs and strategic AIs and all of that kind of thing.
Perfect.
So this game plays really quick. You can go in there. What it's also got, which I like, and this is something that the Suburbia app did a while back, is they have challenges where rather than just playing the vanilla game, you're actually playing the game with certain rule sets in place. Mm. So it might be that you've got to achieve the highest score but only using, let's say, green and blue tokens, or there's certain other scoring mechanisms that you've got to have in place. So the reason behind this is it essentially teaches you how to play the game in a more structured environment. It's not just here's the game, play it and see how you go. It is try and meet these certain challenges because it'll teach you strategies to then win the game when you're playing against AIs or robots or real people at the real table as well.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's good. It is well worth the couple of bucks that I spent. I strongly recommend that anyone who is interested in Splendor, the physical game, jumps on and get this one because I love it.
And I did pick it up for my Android phone. My only complaint being my old man eyes do struggle a little bit.
That's not a fault with the app.
On the screen. But look, it is beautifully clear.
That does look nice.
Look, probably for me, it's better to play it on a tablet-sized device.
Or a 27, 28-inch.
Yeah, but look, I have played it on my phone. And you're right, the fact that you can play it in... There's the music playing in the background.
Yes.
The fact that you can play it in 15 minutes or so is really great.
That will be good for big plane journeys coming up.
Yeah, exactly right. Strongly recommend it, and it doesn't churn through your battery life. I was able to play a lot of these games before the phone died.
Cool.
And then I'll just do something lately, which is that Horus Heresy... which is a talisman game, is on Android and not iOS, Mark. So you can play that before weekend if you really want to play Talisman.
Okay, we're going to come back and finally talk about Pandemic Legacy. And then later on tonight, you're going to teach me a game, Garth.
Yeah. That the dulcet tones of Paul Kelly and Uncle Bill with Teach Me Tonight.
That are the dulcet tones.
It's a long, long, long day I've had. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, spoiler, spoiler, spoiler.
Over.
Spoiler alert. Over. Alert, alert. Turn off now because we are going to spoil the months April through June and July.
No,
or
just June.
Of Pandemic Legacy Season 1. So I strongly recommend that if you don't want to know what happens, turn off now. You have to the count of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mark.
So we played Pandemic Legacy again.
It was the name of his sled when he was a kid.
That's right.
Sorry, what were we talking about?
So, look, we haven't talked about this for quite some time. So we've got a little bit of ground to cover. And we're going to cover it fairly quickly because we don't remember a lot of what happened in those games. They were a little while ago.
It was a long time.
But there was some epic stuff. Now, for my mind, the thing that blew my mind in this whole game so far happened in April.
Yes.
It was not at the start of April, very cleverly, but after the second epidemic in April, the Faded appear. And the Faded are translucent humans, so you can see everything inside their bodies, which is a nice way of saying
zombies.
They're zombies.
Yes. So it becomes The Walking Dead.
It's beautiful how they weave zombies into it. They explain that the disease has mutated, and it goes on from you can't cure it to now not only can you not cure it, but it's spreading throughout the world. And the great thing how where you've got the ground zero or city zero where the Faded started. For us, that was Buenos Aires.
Yes.
And that gets a very special sticker. And then every other city, and in our case it was yellow, every other city where a yellow cube would appear, a Faded appears instead. Now, first, we looked and went, wow, there's lots of Faded. We're never going to run out of those.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
We were wrong. So all Faded cities take on Faded figures. So what that means is if what would be yellow outbreaks into a blue city, that blue city then becomes a Faded. So if it has to spawn a cube, it doesn't spawn blue cubes, it spawns Faded as well. So the Faded are slowly spreading in our game from South America across into South Africa and north up into North America. We've put some permanent roadblock. That's in the next month. We put some things there that stop them spreading across the Atlantic. I don't know how long that'll last. The other thing that happened in April was we won again. After losing both of the March games, we won our April game. So we were on a high. We went into May. What happened in May?
Well, didn't we get some more characters?
We did. We got
soldiers and the colonel.
We got the colonel. And what do we call him? Colonel D. John Mustard.
Oh, we're so funny.
That's right. Now
we play board games.
Yeah. Now, he is the only dude, the only way to actually remove Faded from the board. So prior to May, you can't even get rid of Faded. And he can remove one on his turn if there's a military base in the same region as him. So all of a sudden, military bases become even more important.
But apart from that, he's really almost useless because he requires two extra cards to be able to cure a disease.
Although, he can do something else, which relates to the other thing that came out in May, which is roadblocks. So roadblocks are a way to actually stop the spread of Faded or of cubes from one city to the next. However, to then cross a roadblock, you've got to spend a card. You can't just drive from one city to the next. You've actually got to spend a card, which is quite hard to do. So the Colonel D. John Mustard, he can actually cross the roadblocks without spending the extra card. May wasn't much to talk about there. We had another win!
Woo! Our last one, wasn't it?
No, come on.
Because then June, what did June bring? June brought us another character. The soldier, reporting for duty.
Who can't kill things.
Who has no name because we haven't played him yet.
That's right.
It's getting tough choosing which characters we should play. So the soldier, he doesn't gain a scar if he starts in a city with Faded. Normally if you start in a city with Faded, you get a scar straight away. Now, should we mention here?
Yes, we should.
Knock on wood big time. We have had no scars at all in this game.
Yeah. Two-thirds through the way through the game and not a single scar.
None of our characters have scars.
Which could have happened like turn two or three in the first
absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. I've got to go quickly because we're running out of time. So the soldier can pick up equipment cards. And equipment cards were the other thing that came out in June. So you stick a sticker on a city card, and it can be a piece of equipment. There are grenades. There are hazmat suits. There are field hospitals. There's a whole bunch of things that equipment cards can do. We haven't used many of them, but I'm sure we're going to get to them. And then there was also an extra objective, which was you could quarantine 7 fated cities. Sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
We haven't done it yet. Gives you another way to win the game. So that's June. June, we lost both the games in June.
We lost both the games.
And we sort of took it a bit casually, but hey, good news. We then played July, and we're going to talk about that another time. Because we're out of time again. There's so much happening
Excellent.
In the world of games. So many games to play, so many things to do.
So many t-shirts to buy.
So many people to thank. We'll be back next week to talk about all that and more. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Toodles.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.